Support for this episode comes from T-Mobile. We're a lot more than just baseball fans. We're baseball fanatics. And thanks to T-Mobile, we can stay connected to the game we love with 5G in more places. T-Mobile is your ticket to the game. So whether you're home or away, you're never far from your favorite team with America's largest and fastest 5G network. Don't get caught looking. Switch to T-Mobile, the leader in 5G today. Fastest according to OpenSignal Awards based on average speeds in USA 5G experience report, April 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
SB Nation and T-Mobile present the 2021 MLB All-Star Preview.
Hello and welcome into SB Nation's MLB All-Star Weekend Preview powered by T-Mobile. I'm your host Sam Wilson along with John Stolness of The Good Fight and Brady Klopfer of McCovey Chronicles. Guys, I don't know about you, but I'm a huge fan of the All-Star Weekend usually. I like the fun and games aspect of it. It kind of throws in the younger crowd and makes it a different kind of MLB feel. What are your thoughts going into this weekend, especially after missing the 2020 season? John, I'll start with you.
Yeah, hey, Sam. This is so much fun. The All-Star game is great. It's kind of how I got introduced to baseball way back in, I'm going to prove myself to be the old guy in the room, back in like the mid-80s. And it's always when you're a kid, it's the first time you get to see your players that you watch night in and night out play with the best players in baseball. So you're on that grand stage, and if you root for a team like the Phillies, like I do, you know, you don't see your team on the big stage most of the time. So it's kind of fun to get on national TV and see your players playing with the best players in baseball. And there's something special to the Midsummer Classic. I think it's the one All-Star game that really most resembles what you would see on a regular night in, night out basis. With the NBA All-Star game, there's no defense, and you have games that somebody's almost scoring 200 points, and you have in the NFL, nobody even cares about the Pro Bowl. You know, it's at the end of the season when everybody's forgotten about football. Here it's in the middle of the season. You've got a lot of news happening, and it's a game that resembles what you would see on a really good, crisp summer evening. And so I think the All-Star game is really special and still unique. I think it's the best All-Star game of all the four professional major sports still.
You might be a little biased, but I tend to agree. We might all be on the same page. What about for you, Brady? What's your favorite part about the All-Star game? What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I really like the idea that you get to see players that you just don't normally get to see, because that's a kind of odd thing about being a baseball fan, is your team plays 6 to 7 nights a week. You don't really get to watch other teams very much. So you become familiar with the players on your team. You become familiar with the players in your division. But outside of your division, and especially outside of your league, you might not really get to ever watch those players. If you're a fan of the National League, you might never really get to watch someone like Shohei Ohtani, because that requires watching another baseball game in addition to the 3 hours you're already committing every night to watching your own team. So it's other sports, I feel like it's easier to watch the other stars that aren't on your team or aren't in your division. And the Midsummer Classic is kind of the big chance for baseball fans to be able to get together and watch all of those players, even if they're not used to watching them.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the fun topics about it, is it kind of lets those people from the other divisions, like you said, not only allows other people to be able to experience them, actually play in live action instead of just clips on SportsCenter or something. But then you also get the fun of, like, who's better? Who's going to start? Mm-hmm. So we'll get into it. Starters for the American League. The head coach is Kevin Cash of the Rays. So they have catcher Salvador Perez from Kansas City, first baseman Vladimir Guerrero Jr. from Toronto, second base Marcus Semien of Toronto, third base Rafael Devers of Boston, shortstop Xander Bogaerts of Boston, outfield, as of right now, it's still Mike Trout. They have not replaced him yet. We'll get into who you guys might think will replace him in a little bit. This is his 9th straight season voted as an All-Star starter, excluding obviously 2020. So that's obviously monumental. Aaron Judge of the Yankees, and then Teoscar Hernandez of Toronto finish out that outfield. And then DH Shohei Ohtani, obviously, of the Angels. So before we get into the National League, who replaces Trout in the starting lineup for you guys? Who would you ideally like to see there?
I would love to see Michael Brantley. I mean, I know the Astros, having another Astro in the starting lineup isn't a whole lot of fun, but if you're looking at the best overall outfielder, the guy who I think probably is having the best season overall among the reserves, I think you're probably looking at Michael Brantley. You know, you could put Shohei Ohtani in the outfield and start him in the outfield and then have, you know, JD Martinez or Nelson Cruz move into the DH slot at that point. But if you're looking to keep Shohei Ohtani as the DH in this game, Michael Brantley is probably the best player left on the American League roster to move in as the Mike Trout replacement.
I'm going to go with a less known player or less known prior to this year, I guess, and go with Cedric Mullins. I think he has just been phenomenal this year. I think he might lead the American League in wins above replacement for outfielders this season. I know it's not very exciting to have a Baltimore Oriole starting an All-Star game. That kind of is the antithesis of what this event is supposed to be about. But I think he's just been kind of a next level player this year who's just been buried on a really bad team. And just from a talent perspective, I think that's who I would put in there to replace Trout.
Yeah,
not that anyone can really replace Trout, but...
And Brady, I was going to say, you're right. He does have the highest wins above replacement, according to Fangraphs. Joey Gallo, number two. So you could also go with Joey Gallo in that spot as well. You're not losing a whole lot there with Mullins. But I mean, to your point, I think putting Mullins in the starting lineup, I think that actually really is what the All-Star game is about. You know, you've got if you're an Orioles fan, you have nothing to watch this year, right? I mean, there's you've got nothing. But if your guy gets into the starting lineup, it gives you something to look forward to. It gives you something to watch during the All-Star game. To me, that'd be an awesome thing. That if I was a Phillies fan growing up in the you know, late 80s and Von Hayes somehow makes it into the starting lineup to replace Tony Gwynn or something like that, I'm going out of my mind. So I think that would be a really cool thing.
That's a good point.
No, it is a great point. And I think it also goes to show for Mullins how great of a year he is having, even though he is, as you guys said, kind of buried on the Orioles, for the fact that he was still voted into this. So obviously some fans are seeing him, coaches are seeing him. So it's a testament to him, really, that he even made it here and he's not on the popular team.
No, that's true. And, you know, every team gets one representative. I know we're going to get into that here in just a few minutes. But, you know, Mullins he did not get in by charity. You know, he's hitting .316. You know, he's got an on-base percentage of .384. He's slugging over nearly .550. He's got 16 home runs. I mean, he's doing it all for a team that is a dead team walking, that's really tanking and not trying to win this year. So, I mean, that is a guy who has all the credentials. I changed my answer. Brady, I think you had the right answer.
You persuaded
him. I think
him.
Cedric Mullins. You did. I think Mullins is the right guy.
I'm taking a point for that one.
Yeah.
Not that we're keeping score here, but now I am.
Yeah.
So it did come out already that Correa and Altuve are opting out of the reserves list. Bo Bichette is the only middle infielder now left on the reserve list for the AL roster. So what are some ideas that of people that you guys see hopping on that list if you think they even need to add more for the middle infielders on the reserve list?
I mean, I think if you're looking at different possibilities, I think Whit Merrifield is a guy who kind of got snubbed a little bit. He's kind of a throwback guy, big stolen base guy, a guy who, you know, that's just not what you see in Major League Baseball anymore. But Whit Merrifield with the Royals puts up a lot of stolen bases, 23 stolen bases. He scored 50 runs this year. He's a top of the lineup guy, kind of a leadoff type hitter, which those guys are not celebrated in baseball very much anymore. I mean, we're a long way since the days of Tim Raines and Vince Coleman and really Ricky Henderson, those guys at the top of the lineup that didn't hit for a lot of power, but could really set the table and run around the bases quite a bit. But I think Merrifield is a guy who, you know, he's not an upper echelon offensive player, but he gives you a ton with his defense and he gives you that element that you just don't see in baseball anymore. And what baseball needs is action. They need action on the bases. I would look for Whit Merrifield to be added to the team probably in the next couple of days.
If I were adding two players in there, I would also go with Whit Merrifield, and I'd also add Yoan Moncada, who he's a very exciting player. He's a very good player. You know, he brings a lot of fun all-star power and personality, which is fun. Or you could go with Tim Anderson, I think would also be pretty deserving there.
Anderson's a great pick for that one. Okay, so moving on to the National League, coaching it is Dave Roberts from the Dodgers, and then catcher Buster Posey from San Fran, first base Freddie Freeman from Atlanta, Second base, Adam Frazier from Pittsburgh. Third base, Nolan Arenado from St. Louis. Shortstop, Fernando Tatis Jr. from San Diego. And then in the outfield, we have Ronald Acuna Jr. from Atlanta, Nick Castellanos from Cincinnati, Jesse Winker from Cincinnati. And then pitcher, they do not have named yet, which most likely is because DeGrom, I don't think he's officially opted out, but he has told reporters that he will not be there because he's preparing for the second half and would want that family time. What do you guys think about that lineup, and what do you think about DeGrom's decision?
I think it makes sense for DeGrom to opt out, to be honest, and it's a bummer. You know, I think that's one of the dangers of doing this in the middle of the season instead of at the end like you have in football. I still think they should be doing it in the middle because it's way more fun, but you have players like Jacob DeGrom who have struggled with injuries in the past and who have been rehabbing injuries this year and really need to be focusing on their health and their performance as their team is gearing up for a playoff push. And it just doesn't make sense given how fragile he has been both this year and in previous years, I think, for him to be risking that. And that's, you see that a lot with pitchers. I mean, Kevin Gausman, I think, would have been the person lined up to start with DeGrom out, but he's scheduled to pitch on Sunday in the, mm-hmm. the Giants' last game. So he's obviously not going to be playing either. So, you know, I think it's the right decision, but it's just an unfortunate situation where you then end up losing a lot of
star power.
Yeah, a lot of star power. Yeah. So I'm curious who they replace him with, because truthfully, it's not the strongest year for National League pitchers, at least as far as who's been selected. The kind of usual suspects like Max Scherzer and Clayton Kershaw didn't make the roster. So they might come in as reserves, but they're obviously not going to slide into the starting role. So I'm curious to see who they pick. I think I would probably go with Yu Darvish, but I really don't think you can go wrong with many of those starting pitchers that are on the reserve list for the National League.
Wrong answer on Yu Darvish. Wrong answer on Yu Darvish. It's got to be Zach Wheeler.
I was going to say it, but I think our bias, we might get casted out for it, John, but I love it.
No.
No, you're right. You're totally right. It should be Zach Wheeler. We're even now, John.
Yeah, we've each got a plus one now. We've each got a plus one. I mean, Zach Wheeler, he's nipping Jacob DeGrom's heels in terms of Fangraphs wins above replacement. I think he has more Baseball Reference wins above replacement. Now, DeGrom, like you mentioned, has had to leave a bunch of games early. He's missed a few starts this year. So I think Zach Wheeler has made an additional three starts and has gone longer into his starts. But that's one of the things is that, you know, you got to stay on the mound. You got to stay healthy. And Jacob DeGrom has had a hard time, as amazing as he has been this year, has had a hard time doing that. So it's Zach Wheeler to me is the guy who you would slot in there, even after kind of a subpar start his last time out against the Cubs. Still has a 2.26 ERA, and the FIP does not tell you that he's gotten lucky. It's 2.34. So you've got in Zach Wheeler a guy who is a true number one starter now. It's exactly what the Phillies were hoping for when they signed him a couple off seasons ago. And to me, he's just, you also have to look at when was his last start? His last start came on Wednesday. It's going to slot perfectly into having him start the All-Star game. And it's something that he wants too. So you could also make an argument for a couple of the Brewers starters. You know, those guys have been out of control. Brandon Woodruff this year has been absolutely amazing. You know, Freddie Peralta has been amazing. You know, there's any number of those guys you could use, but to me, it's Wheeler. And it's not a homer pick either. I think he legitimately deserves the start.
And the best ability is availability, to your point about him having more innings pitched than DeGrom. There is a lot of value in that, and I'm just a bitter Giants fan, sad that they traded Wheeler before he had a chance to develop.
I mentioned Freddie Peralta a second ago. I forgot he hasn't made the All-Star team, but he's a guy who could get added if DeGrom doesn't if they remove him from the roster. So
that was one of my questions next. Now, looking at both of these starting rosters, were there any surprises for you guys? Were there any misses that you thought the fans and coaches really got wrong? What were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think as far as the biggest snub in the National League for me was Max Scherzer. I was amazed that, I mean, there have been a bunch of good pitching performances in the National League this year. And, you know, they have had to create a couple of spots for players, you know, on teams where you're not necessarily going to maybe they wouldn't. Maybe German Marquez doesn't make the All-Star team over Max Scherzer if you don't need a Colorado Rocky on there. But you have Trevor Story on there too. So, you know, that the one Rocky situation doesn't really come into play here. I'm not exactly sure how Max Scherzer kind of missed out on this roster. To me, he's the first guy I add if they need to bring somebody else aboard here, if DeGrom does officially decide to opt out.
So worth noting here, Story did not actually make the team. He's just on the Home Run Derby. So Marquez is their only representative. So I think he is the one who is taking Max Scherzer's place there. But I agree, Max Scherzer is just that's a tough omission to have. And you know, we can get into this more when we talk about the rule where every team has to have a representative. But it's a bummer that you have a player like Max Scherzer just isn't in this game when really he's one of the elite pitchers in all of baseball. To me, the other snub that jumps off the page is Manny Machado. There are a lot of really good third basemen, so there was going to be a snub there regardless. Mm-hmm. But I think he leads the National League in wins above replacement. He's certainly way up there. He's just, you know, he's an elite player. He gets a little overshadowed by how fun the star power of Fernando Tatis Jr. is, but Manny Machado is still a star player. He's still an MVP caliber player. In a slightly more fair and just All-Star game would be on the field.
Brady, you just mentioned it. The aspect that every team is required to have a representative, obviously their rationale most likely behind it is the fact that this is supposed to bring the whole league together. It's supposed to bring all the fans together. So they want everybody to have somebody to root for. But what are your thoughts on it as much as fairness?
I hate it. It's been one of my least favorite rules in baseball for as long as I can remember. I think it's just a bummer for everybody. I get the claim that it brings teams together and whatnot, but I don't think it brings them together the way that MLB envisioned. Like, John, you were talking about how cool it would be for an Orioles fan to have Cedric Mullins starting. And I agree with that because he's a very valid starter. I don't think any Detroit Tigers fan is going to be so excited for the All-Star game on Tuesday so they can watch Gregory Soto. You know, the Mariners fans aren't tearing down the roof to get to the TV to watch Yusei Kikuchi instead of maybe a Chris Bassett or someone who is a better player. So I don't think it really accomplishes that with those players that are just sneaking in. And I think at some level, it's not really the case this year, but I think at some level in the past, there have been times where it's a little almost offensive to the players who do sneak in and awkward. You know, there have been times where you have like relievers with a ERA in the fours that are getting into the All-Star game because who else from their team is going to make it? And reliever is an easy place to like slide someone in without it being a fuss. So, I think it's kind of awkward. I would feel kind of uncomfortable if I were Eduardo Escobar walking around at the All-Star game while Manny Machado's at home. All due respect to Eduardo Escobar. And I just think it's, to me, it's just kind of a dishonest way to do an All-Star game. This is meant to celebrate the best players in baseball, not to give a little handout to every team. It should just be the best players in baseball. I think we should celebrate that.
I completely disagree. I love that every team has a representative because, like I said, I am one of those kids that wanted to see Ricky Bitalico in 1996 as the only Phillies player at Veterans Stadium for that All-Star game. And it, yes, was kind of depressing at the same time. There's no doubt about it. A couple of years ago when Pat Nashak was the only Phillies representative, not even a closer, mind you, a middle reliever was the Phillies' only representative at the All-Star game. Yeah, kind of a black eye. And yes, he did take a spot from somebody who probably deserved it more. But the game at the end of the day is for the fans, right? This is an exhibition. It's an exhibition showcase for the fans. And I think that most fans are happy to watch one, even if it's just one of their players play. And even if it is a pitcher like Pat Nashak, who is not a star, and that season he was going to be traded at the trade deadline anyway. So, you know, he was not even going to probably finish the season with your team. But there it does give you something to watch if you're a fan of that team, at least for me. And I love the rule. I hope it never goes away. I think if you want to do like you said, Brady, and make it so that every deserving player gets on, expand the rosters. Make the rosters two players bigger. Make it three players bigger so you can do that. It's an exhibition game. If everybody doesn't get a chance to play, it's fine. It's not a big deal. But at the very least, you get everybody or most players who deserve, and you still are able to let every team have a representative there. So Just expand the rosters a few players, you solve this problem, and you still get to allow fans to have at least one of their players play in the Midsummer Classic.
I like that. That's a fun solution. Plus, you then get to keep all the merchandise dollars of every team being able to have an all-star jersey.
Exactly.
If you expand the rosters, I mean, obviously it's not by a lot, but does it take away from the sentiment of having all-star player on a guy's career list or achievement list?
I don't think so, because, you know, it's as we've expanded in Major League Baseball, there's just, you know, there's more teams now. And so I think it would make sense that the roster expands just a little bit. I mean, you know, I guess there's an argument to be made for that, but to me, you wouldn't necessarily. I mean, as it is now, you look at Pat Neshek, you look at Ricky Pitalico, two relievers that, you know, were lone representatives. But, you know, I don't think it has necessarily sullied anything that they made the All-Star team. And if you expanded it a couple different, you know, by two or three different roster spots, to me, it wouldn't hurt things at all.
Yeah, I don't think it would sully it much as long as you're staying within kind of those parameters you were describing, John, where it's made to include the players who got snubbed because of this rule.
Yes, deserve.
If you just add a few, so you're getting your Max Scherzers and your Chris Bassetts and your Manny Machados in there. Mm-hmm. I think that's even better.
Now, another topic that might get you guys going. I know it gets John going. The uniforms this year. John, I know you were already telling us a little bit pre-show that you're very disappointed that everybody's got kind of actual uniforms instead of their regular team uniform and representation. What makes you so mad about it?
Yeah. What are we doing here? Why are we ruining something that works? And I'm a uniform guy, so I've always enjoyed, you know, uniforms as they've evolved through the years. I'm a big 80s, 90s throwback uniform guy, so I miss all the powder blues that was common throughout Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. back in the 70s and 80s, and you know, some of the classic uniforms. We saw the Padres go back to the brown and the yellow, which is just amazing. When the Nationals do a throwback to the Expos uniforms, I think that's phenomenal. I hope Montreal gets a team and they call themselves the Expos and bring the old uniforms back, bring Yuppie back, and the whole thing. I'm a nostalgia guy, and so one of my favorite things as a kid was watching the All-Star game and seeing all the uniforms at the same time. And seeing all the logos at the same time, seeing all the hats at the same time, those old Pirates pillbox hats and everything like that. I was just, I'm a total mark for all that kind of stuff. And now you've got, not only are they all the same, like dark blue or dark red or whatever they are, you know, they're ugly looking. They were invented by a small child somewhere in a room, you know, someplace in MLB headquarters. It takes away from the visual beauty of it, I think. You know, it just makes it kind of blah. It makes it, you know, it looks like a slow pitch softball all-star league. You know, I mean, I just let the players wear their own uniforms and get them, you know, so you can see them all at one time. I hate it. I hate that they did this. But again, it's for marketing. It's why they did it.
Brady, what about you? Does it bother you as much?
Yeah, this is a historic day, John, and I are on the exact same page here. I despise it. And like John said, it's for marketing. You make more money. I'm sure these things cost like $400, and I'm sure people are going to eat them up the way people are eating up the awful City Connect jerseys for some reason that I don't understand. But I hate it for all those same reasons. I mean, we were talking about the American League outfield, Cedric Mullins potentially replacing Mike Trout in the outfield. I was just thinking of an outfield with a Baltimore Orioles jersey of Cedric Mullins, the pinstripes of Aaron Judge, and a baby blue Teoscar Hernandez jersey. That's beautiful. That's the first thing I think of when I think of the All-Star game, is an outfield with three different jerseys, an infield with four different jerseys, different colored caps, different color schemes. It's just a celebration, really. When you look at a field that's not just full of the best players, but full of all these different jerseys with different colors and designs, that to me is how we really celebrate 30 teams getting together and putting their best players forward for an exhibition game. And I remember as a kid watching them with all their own jerseys, and it was just so fun. It's just so fun to see so many different jerseys in one game and so many different colors, and everyone wearing the jerseys that they wear 162 games a year, that that's how you identify them in that jersey. And you lose a lot, in my opinion, when you put them all in the same jerseys and make them look like they're an intramural team or something.
I agree with you guys wholeheartedly on that topic. And also, I think one point is not every single fan watching the All-Star game is a super fan. You know, so there are going to be people that pay attention to the National League and hear people that they might want to cheer for on the American League or see and want to become a fan of, and they're not going to realize what team they are on. And I think that's a big aspect that's missing from it as well. One thing we haven't gotten into yet is the fact that the All-Star game was supposed to take place at Truist Park in Atlanta, but was moved to Coors Field in Denver due to political reasons. So now let's welcome in a guest, Demetrius Bell of Talking Chop, to find out more on the situation. Demetrius, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to get right into it. You've written about it before. You're from Georgia. The MLB draft and All-Star weekend were originally supposed to take place in Atlanta in 2020, then obviously got pushed back because of the pandemic. And then ultimately was moved to Coors Field in Denver due to political reasons. Can you give us a walkthrough of the reason for the move?
Basically, all this stems from is there was a huge controversy here in Georgia when Joe Biden won Georgia. For the most part, this is all like a reaction from Brian Kemp and the Republicans in the state who came up with the law that was basically like a very restrictive voting law. And, you know, you've heard people saying like, oh, there's nothing in the law that says that, oh, they're specifically targeting black voters. But if you read the bill and if like you see what the spirit of the bill is, it's very clear who they were targeting with that. And while it's a huge bummer that they did take it out, because like I pointed out in the article I wrote, I was definitely looking forward to going to basically all that stuff. I look at the Home Run Derby, I get real sad because like they added like people like Juan Soto into it and Shohei Ohtani. And so it's a huge bummer. But at the same time, it makes sense. If you're doing stuff that is restrictive to people when it comes to their basic rights, such as voting, then, you know, sometimes you have to pay the consequences. And so it's a huge bummer, but it was something that, in my opinion, like, I can understand them doing it.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. As a black man yourself who's from the Atlanta area and covers the Braves, what were your thoughts initially on MLB's decision to move the events? Obviously, you said you were bummed. Did you agree with it right away? Did you have to, like, kind of look into it more?
Well, like, I had to, like, look into it considering the history of events like this being moved out of other cities because of similar infringements on human rights. Like, I know one example I brought was the Super Bowl being moved out of Tempe, Arizona, because they didn't want to acknowledge Martin Luther King Day as a holiday. They literally moved that Super Bowl out of there until they acknowledged it as a holiday, and then they eventually had Super Bowl 30 there. And so, again, like, it was a huge bummer, but I understood why. Like, you know, you hear folks talking about, like, how it's like a huge financial detriment to the city of Atlanta and the surrounding area. And like that may be true. There may be like some local businesses who may have like been losing out on a little bit of foot traffic that would have come from the All-Star weekend. But at the same time, like, you know, all those would have been like very negligible, because like you hear this all the time when it comes to like people who are threatening to like leave the city because of they're trying to build a new stadium. So I feel like it was in a similar vein here and stuff like that. Initially, it was a bummer, but like once you had to look into the history of how leagues have treated issues like this, it made sense and it fell in line with what has been done in the past.
Yeah, you brought up how the NFL moved the Super Bowl out of Arizona because of Martin Luther King Day not being recognized as a holiday in that state. But then also in your article, you mentioned the NBA most recently moved the 2017 All-Star Weekend out of Charlotte because of their discriminatory bill that was passed against the LGBTQ community. So with those going on or happening before, they did eventually reversed the laws and then brought the events back into those states. Do you see Atlanta reversing this law? And then if so, do you see the All-Star weekend coming back to Atlanta?
When it comes to Georgia, it's a very tricky situation, because I think I mentioned in that article that the only reason why those situations changed is because the power situation at the top changed. However, because of what they're doing with the voting restrictions, like, it makes it very difficult where they could actually go on there and mess around with the election results should, you know, Governor Kemp's position come under fire in an election. So my thinking is that, like, even if he does, like, you know, lose the election, he could, you know, still find a way to cling on to power. And if he does cling on to power, then the law is definitely not going to change at that point. So of course, I can't, like, predict the future, but, like, as far as what I think, it's looking a little grim in that department. But we'll have to see.
More of a hope, and hopefully it happens soon, but you don't know exactly when to predict when it happens.
Yeah, I will add that, like, if that voting rights bill that they've been talking about in Congress. If they pass that, then maybe that'll change some stuff. But until then, it's not looking good in that department.
Now, the Braves, they didn't have the most appropriate response to the move, stating that they were deeply disappointed in the MLB's decision and that they could have used this event as a platform to enhance the discussion about the new voter laws. Were you disappointed by the Braves' response?
Oh, yeah, because I was definitely disappointed because it didn't feel like they were genuine in that, especially since, like, they have spent this season dedicating it to Hank Aaron, of all people, who is, he would have definitely been outspoken against that, the voting rights bill that was passed. So hearing that coming from the Braves, it seemed like, you know, they were trying to talk, like, two sides out of their mouth, because, like, on one side, they're trying to honor Hank Aaron and his legacy and what he stood for, but at the same time, they're trying to say that, oh, it was a bad idea to do something that Hank Aaron would have been in favor of, more than likely.
Yeah, that was my next question about Hank Aaron. Do you think, I mean, he's known as being one of a civil rights activist as well as with his obviously iconic baseball career. So do you think he would have really stepped out and went against the Braves in this? Because it is hypocritical, as you could say, because they're honoring him all year.
Well, I wouldn't say that he would have, you know, had like a fiery response or anything like that, but I definitely believe that he probably would have put out like a statement that would have clearly put where his position was at, and it more than likely would have been in contrary to what the Braves put out in their statement.
Now, Demetrius, thank you so much for joining us again. Before we let you go, let everyone know where they can find you and some of the work you do and all of your social media platforms they can reach out to.
Okay, so you can find me at Talking Chop, where I usually post blogs about the Atlanta Braves and their goings on from time to time. And also I write about sports logos and uniforms for Forward Sports. And occasionally you can see me on Baseball Prospectus. And my social media is @Fergo on Twitter, F-E-R-G-O-E. And that's about it.
Perfect. For everyone else, stay tuned for more SB Nation All-Star Weekend previews brought to you by T-Mobile.
Thanks to T-Mobile for supporting this episode and for keeping baseball fans around the country connected to the game. Because when you're on America's largest and fastest 5G network, you get more than great coverage. You get to stay close to your favorite team, whether you're at home or on the road. In other words, T-Mobile is your ticket to the game. Make the switch to T-Mobile, the leader in 5G today. Fastest according to OpenSignal Awards based on average speeds and USA 5G experience report, April 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back to SB Nation's MLB All-Star Weekend Preview brought to you by T-Mobile. Guys, let's look more into the other aspects from around the league. So first half stories we want to look at. We mentioned Jacob deGrom already, and we most likely won't see him in the All-Star game. But he's having an incredible season on the mound, one that's probably the best for all. I mean, I'm a little younger than you guys, but one of the best that we've probably all been able to see. He's pitched 92 innings so far, has a 7-2 record, a 1.08 ERA, and 146 strikeouts so far. What can you guys speak on that?
Well, I mean, he has been the best pitcher in baseball for the last couple of years. He's now moving into that upper echelon of you know, classic Pedro Martinez type stuff here, even better than classic Pedro Martinez. And he's essentially cementing himself as a Hall of Famer, which is kind of cool to watch happen in real time. You know, you get to see a guy. And the funny thing about Jacob deGrom is that when he was in the minors, he didn't throw like this. He didn't have this kind of velocity. He wasn't throwing 98, 99, 100 miles an hour. So nobody really kind of saw this coming from him. I think he was a pretty good prospect, but he was never a guy where you thought, there's a future Hall of Famer there. But it just goes to show you that when you get to the major league level, you can still continue to develop as a player. It doesn't all happen in the minor leagues. And so watching him do what he's done since he came to the big league level is really kind of amazing. And to have the season he's having, I know it's the year of the pitcher, but even once Major League Baseball started checking for the sticky stuff, the numbers didn't drop off. He's continuing to do what he does. And it's kind of amazing to see. So we haven't seen, I mean, this, I guess the comparison is like to Clayton Kershaw at his best, just from last decade, you know. Is I think what we're seeing might even be a little bit more impressive than what Clayton Kershaw was doing when Kershaw was in his prime just a few years ago.
Yeah, it's been just phenomenal to watch above all else. But to John's point of DeGrom kind of not necessarily being this big of a prospect, I mean, few people ever are big enough prospect that you expect this type of greatness out of them. But to me, he's kind of the poster boy for this era of Major League Baseball, where you're seeing a lot of teams with new modern analytics departments, developmental staffs, and they're really being able to take players and help them reach levels that you didn't think they'd be able to reach if you were watching them in high school or college or even in the minors, sometimes even their first few years in the majors. And so to me, DeGrom, the way that he's been able to increase his velocity, the way he's been able to increase his spin rate, the way that he's been able to hone in on certain pitches, to me, it just all screams this new era of baseball where you're really able to get the most out of these players. It's not always going to be the player who looked the best when they were 20 or looked the best in Double A. There are some of these diamonds in the rough that look like they'll be all right. And then you give them the right tools, you tap into something that they can change mechanically or philosophically, and suddenly you have a player who, like John said, is blossoming into a Hall of Famer right before our eyes. And really the dominance is, I mean, you said Pedro Martinez, John. I think that's a perfect comparison. I do think he's been better this year than we've seen even from the best of Clayton Kershaw. You really have to go to a player like Pedro Martinez to see this type of dominance where you're not just putting up good numbers, but you really look unhittable. I mean, DeGrom had 4 earned runs through his first 12 starts. He's had double-digit strikeouts 7 times in 15 starts. 14 or more strikeouts 4 times in 15 starts. That's, you know, on pace to have 8 or 9 games of 14 or more strikeouts. We don't usually get that from all of baseball in a season. Right. So the way he's been doing it, it looks sustainable, which is amazing. It's just fun to watch because there are few things in baseball. I know everyone loves home runs, but there are few things in baseball that are as exciting as a pitcher who just genuinely looks like he can't be hit.
Yeah, it's reminiscent of Bob Gibson in the 60s, which I am too young for, so I just to clear that up. But if you look at the numbers from Bob Gibson in the 60s, I mean, this is what Bob Gibson did. He was so far head and shoulders ahead of where the hitters were at that time. He was just overpowering and could do whatever he wanted out there. And that's kind of what we're seeing with DeGrom right now. It's a modern day Bob Gibson. It is. You're right. We hear a lot about, oh, there's too many strikeouts. There's too many walks. And listen, there's a fair amount of that is accurate and true. And we need more balls put in play. But the special pitchers, no one ever complained about watching Nolan Ryan strike out 5,000 some odd players. So there are some pitchers who do it with a little bit of flair, and it's kind of fun to watch. And you know, when you watch DeGrom, he could throw a perfect game any night that he's out there.
Another player that's having a fantastic year, Shohei Ohtani. He's been called superhuman. He's been called the modern day Babe Ruth, which I know neither of you guys were around for. he's been pitching. He'll throw a ball over 100 miles per hour and then go and hit a 450-foot home run the next half inning. He's got 12 stolen bases, so it's not even like he's just needs to jog. He's an actual all-around athlete. He could hit the 60 home run mark this year. What about that? Is there anybody that you can think of in your time that even compares to the, I don't even know what to call him, superhuman, and modern day Babe Ruth is really the closest thing I can think to compare to him. Is there anything else that you guys can think of?
You have to go way, way back before my time to find anyone doing anything comparable in my eyes. What he's doing is, it's just on a different level. It just hasn't been done in so long. And I don't think anyone thought it would ever be done that we could have a two-way player in this era where pitchers are throwing as hard as they can and have as many specialty pitches as they can. You know, the reason that pitchers are such bad hitters is hitting is just so hard now, and you need to dedicate so much time to the timing of it. And most pitchers aren't going to do that, can't do that, wouldn't have good results even if they did do that. It's really just unprecedented, and I really don't think anyone thought that this could happen. And I remember when Shohei Ohtani got posted, you know, however many years ago that was, and I really wanted the Giants to sign him because I just liked the concept. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted a two-way player. I thought that has just so much fun, and I expected, oh, maybe you're a number 4, number 5 starter and a decent, you know, 6 or 7 hitter in the lineup. And instead, what we have is the best home run hitter in baseball right now, and one of the best pitchers. genuinely one of the best pitchers with a few of the best pitches. And that's just ridiculous to not only be a star on both ends, but to be someone who is competing for a Cy Young as a pitcher and would be competing for an MVP as a hitter, even if you took out his contributions as a pitcher. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about the reason why pitchers have traditionally never been really good hitters is that if you're going to be a really successful major league hitter, you spend all of your time on that craft, right? I mean, you are breaking down video of every pitcher. You're working in the cage on your swing over and over again. You're focused and you're doing your field work, but you're focusing on being a hitter. That is your job. If you're going to be a really good major league pitcher, one of the best major league pitchers in baseball, that's all you do. You're not exhausting yourself by being in the cage all the time. And you're constantly working on your grip. You're constantly looking at your mechanics. You're constantly looking at everything like that to kind of figure out, you know, what you can do better, you know, and you're constantly looking at scouting reports of hitters you're going to face coming up. So I don't even know logistically how Shohei Ohtani manages to do both of these things, other than he's just so much more naturally gifted than any other Major League Baseball player we have seen perhaps ever in the history of the league, that it's really hard to quantify what he's doing. The fact that he can go out there and he can lead Major League Baseball in home runs and steal bases and to hit for a high average and a good on-base percentage. I mean, it's not like these are empty home runs. I mean, he's producing every single night that he's out there, and then go out on the mound and be one of the better pitchers in the American League. It's we haven't ever seen anything like this before. I mean, we used to get excited when Madison Bumgarner would come to the plate because we think, oh, Bumgarner is a pretty good pitcher, a hitter for a pitcher. You know, he hits the 250, 260. He hits about, you know, five or six bombs a year. But the Giants never had any thought of having him play the outfield when he wasn't pitching. And, you know, Shohei Ohtani has the advantage of being able to DH while he's in the American League. So that's a big thing. And the Giants never had that with Bumgarner. But, you know, Zach Greinke was another guy who could always hit as a pitcher. You know, there have been pitchers who could hit. But you never, ever looked at any of those guys as being an everyday player on the 4 days that they don't pitch, and then a guy who takes the mound and shoves every fifth day. So, no. And I don't even know. And Babe Ruth, you know, Babe Ruth didn't really hit his heights as a power hitter until he stopped pitching. So when you look at Babe Ruth, he didn't pitch throughout his career as well as hit. What we're seeing with Ohtani is something that we may never see again, because baseball's been played for a really long time. We've never seen anything like this before.
And it's only getting harder to do it, in my opinion, with the talent and the advancements in player performance and physicality. I mean, you know, Babe Ruth, even if he had been doing what Ohtani was doing, he would have been doing it off of, you know, 85-mile-an-hour pitches instead of 100-mile-an-hour pitches. The sport's getting harder, and being able to do what Ohtani's doing is getting harder, I think.
I know what you guys are going to say on this next question, but do you feel that Ohtani's stardom, I guess you can say, I feel like everywhere you look about baseball, it's always Shohei Ohtani. Do you feel like it's stealing some of DeGrom's season and stardom that he's having this year? And do you think it's rightfully so?
I think Major League Baseball has been waiting for Shohei Ohtani and a story like this, because in sports, there are certain players that transcend the sport, right? I mean, basketball has a number of those guys, but guys like LeBron and Kobe and all those guys, they transcend the sport. You know, football has some of those guys. Brady is one of those guys. Aaron Rodgers is one of those guys. Baseball has been looking for a guy like that for some time. Mike Trout, they've always wanted Mike Trout to be that guy, and Trout just has never been interested in being that transcendent figure. Transcendent player for sure, but not that transcendent figure. Shohei Ohtani is that guy. You know, he does, again, now he's from Japan, so he doesn't necessarily, you know, he's not going to be doing car commercials just yet, because he's still getting acclimated to living life in the United States, I'm sure. You know, it's definitely not, you know, English is not his first language, so there's probably a lot of that going on, but I don't know how well he speaks English or anything like that. But just the fact that he is doing what he's doing, he's not just a sports story. He's a news story. And baseball hasn't had a guy like that in a long time. I'm trying to think of the last guy who was a news story in a good way. You know, like the Astros were a news story in a bad way. You know, you've had players come down the pike, the steroid era, players in a bad way becoming news stories. Shohei Ohtani is the first real good news story, probably. Gosh, I can't remember the last one since the Sosa-Maguire home run chase. And even that, in later years got tainted. So it's definitely I don't think there's anything wrong with him overshadowing Jacob deGrom, because this is an unprecedented story.
Yeah, I fully agree. It's unprecedented is really the perfect word for it. You know, John mentioned earlier that Ohtani has a case for being the most talented player in Major League history. I think there's a case that this is the most impressive season in Major League history. What he's doing, it really might go down as the greatest, most impressive season we've ever seen. And he might turn around and do better next year, for all we know. I don't have any problem, just because, you know, what DeGrom is doing is great. It's elite. It's incredible. We've seen it a lot of times. And what Ohtani's doing is truly transcendent. With that said, I do think baseball over the last 20 or so years, maybe even more, has had a very difficult time promoting itself, has had a very difficult time marketing its star players. So just because Ohtani should be the top billing, I don't think excuses Major League Baseball for doing such a bad job with DeGrom and with other players. Those players should be promoted more heavily. We should see more of them. We should have more reason to get excited. There should be a larger reach to players to fans outside of their team's market. I think Major League Baseball has really failed there. So I think DeGrom deserves more. But he doesn't deserve whatever he deserves. Ohtani deserves even more, because he is a superstar at the highest level.
Now, the MLB trade deadline is coming up at the end of the month. What are your guys' top moves, top players to watch these next few weeks?
I'm very curious to see if Max Scherzer gets traded. I know there's been a lot of talk there. It's always a difficult thing with a Scott Boras client. And there have been a lot of, you know, rumors and reports that that they won't accept a trade unless it comes with an extension as well. And our team's going to be willing to do that. I'm not sure, but you know, that's the one player who I really see as being a potentially available needle mover who could create a very interesting dynamic at the trade deadline. But as for a larger story that I'm really interested in is just to see what the market becomes at the deadline, because the trade deadline has really been shifting a lot in the last few years. And especially as teams become a little bit more analytically savvy, they've been more hesitant to part with prospects. They've been happier to look for maybe waiver wire claims or under the radar players who they think they can make a tweak on and develop a little bit and have them fill that hole. We're not seeing quite as many of those big packages where teams are trading, you know, a top 10 prospect for a rental reliever. That just isn't happening very much. But there are so many teams this year that have to feel like they legitimately have a chance to compete for a World Series, but aren't even a guarantee to get in the playoffs. It's just been that kind of a year that we might end up with a bidding war that forces some of these teams that have been hesitant to give up assets are suddenly going to have to do it just to stay in that bidding war.
Yeah, and to Brady's point, the starting pitching market is really weak. And given where the Nationals are in the National League East, they got on a hot streak when Kyle Schwarber was going nuts. I'm not so sure they're going to be looking to sell Max Scherzer. And if Max Scherzer is not on the block, the best guy probably is Kyle Gibson of the Rangers. And I'm not moving big pieces if Kyle Gibson is my number one target. I think the most fascinating team to watch here is what the Yankees do. You know, I think Fangraphs has them at like 38% to make the playoffs. That's not a small percentage. Certainly teams have come back from much longer odds to go to the postseason. But you've got in the division the Red Sox, who are playing really well. You've got a Rays team that went to the World Series last year and has a lot of young talent. And you've got the Blue Jays, who I think are a better team than the Yankees right now. So the Yankees, I think, are the fourth best team in that division right now. Do they contemplate trading away Aaron Judge? You know, Aaron Judge is going to be a free agent after this year. You know, they could go out and they could trade Aroldis Chapman. You know, they could trade Chad Green. The idea of a Yankee sell-off just seems so antithetical of what they normally do. But it might be the smart thing for them to do, to deal away Aaron Judge. And that's going to be a fascinating couple of weeks for Brian Cashman. Does he have the stones to trade away Aaron Judge? Would the New York fan base let him do that if he felt it was the right thing for the team? I'm not so sure that he can.
Real quick, do you guys see anything with the National League West, anything happening out there to push some of those teams up higher get the leverage out there?
I don't actually think that any of those teams are going to get too crazy at the deadline, to be honest. I think they all have a process that they believe in. You know, the Dodgers have been arguably baseball's best team for many years now. They're not one to panic, especially with the amount of players that they're going to be welcoming back off the injured list. I think the Padres have already sold so many assets to get to the point where they're at, and they're pretty comfortable with their team, even though they're third in the division. And the Giants, I just don't see the Giants being willing to give up any assets, maybe a small move here and there, but they're overperforming. They're way ahead of expectations. They're way ahead of schedule. I'm sure a lot of fans would love them to swing a big move to try and stay ahead of the Dodgers, but in reality, as good as they've been this year, they're still looking a little bit down the road, and I don't think they're going to part with anything. So in their own unique ways, I think all three of those teams are pretty comfortable with where they are, and I don't see any of them really giving up any big prospects, unless, you know, John brought up Aaron Judge, which would be a fascinating case, and we know that the Dodgers don't just sit around and let players like Aaron Judge hit the market and not start calling the phones. So if there's a big name out there, the Dodgers are always going to get in.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say too. I think the Dodgers, if you're going to, I think they have to be nervous by what they're seeing from the Padres and the Giants too. And I wonder about a second half fade from the Giants, but I mean, they're getting so much good production from their veterans and Posey and Crawford, and it's Gausman. I don't know if Gausman can continue to do what he's been doing so far this year, but I would expect the Giants to fade a little bit here in the second half and for this to become a two-team race. But that being said, the Dodgers never sit still. The Dodgers never just hang on. I mean, they won their World Series last year, so the pressure's off, but I still think that this is a franchise that wants to create a dynasty for themselves. And so, yeah, I could easily see them going out and strengthening a starting pitching rotation, which at the beginning of the year, everybody thought was loaded, but has suffered some injuries. You don't know what Kershaw is going to, how long he's going to be out. You don't know what he's going to be like when he gets back. And so there's a couple things the Dodgers could do that I think if any team's going to make a push, it's going to be them.
Now, there have been some rule changes this year. I'm just curious, which one do you guys think is the most ridiculous? Which ones do you like? So obviously we have the sticky stuff, checking pitchers. There's also talk about making an all-around DH for the whole league, and then the extra innings free base runner kind of thing. Which one bothers you guys most?
Well, for me, the one that bothers me the most is the extra innings free base runner. I mean, we're not playing wiffle ball. What are we doing here? I mean, is it really going to hurt us to have a 15-inning baseball game? One of the, you know, some of, again, what makes baseball really crazy and kooky and one of the greatest games and the games that you really remember are the 18-inning games, the 19-inning games. They're unicorns. They don't happen very often. They don't happen every year. So when they happen, it's okay. Yes, you have to figure out as a manager how you're going to deal with that for the next few days. It can mess you up for a week. It sure can. Score a run, you know? I mean, then you don't have a 19-inning game. There's a solution to this. Score a run. Beat the team earlier. It does give you more action having the base runner start on second base with nobody out, but to me, it's a weasel's way out. I don't like that rule. I want to see teams that you have to, as a manager, be thinking, you know, if this game goes long, I can't blow everyone in the first 9 innings of this game. Otherwise, I'm going to be up a tree if this game goes into the 14th or 15th inning. So everybody who wants managers to be having to think ahead and to think, you know, multiple moves down the road, they don't have to do that if they know the game's not going to go past the 10th or 11th inning. So I think it's silly. I think it's dumb. And somebody brought up an interesting point to me too. What if there is a pitcher who has a perfect game and he pitches into the 10th inning? And you get the runner to start on second base, and they sacrifice the guy over to third base and hit a sacrifice fly to score the winning run. The guy has not given up a hit or a walk. He has not put anybody on base, and yet he loses 1-0. Is that a perfect game? That's why it's a dumb rule.
For you, Brady?
I could not agree more with anything you said. That everything I co-sign 1,000,000%. I've had this debate with a lot of people about the perfect game, whether that qualifies as a perfect game or not. Everyone seems to have very strong opinions as to whether that does, except me. I'm so lost on it because everything about this rule yeah. is so stupid.
I don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah, it's very weird. But so I think that the extra inning rule is, you know, they're selling it as health and safety, trying to keep teams from getting overexerted and blah, blah, blah. to me, what it really is about is Rob Manfred thinking, you just watched 9 innings of baseball. There's no way you want to watch more of this.
Yeah.
You're done. You're tired. And I hate that. I hate the idea that I just invested 3 hours of my life watching this game, and now you're going to arbitrarily change the rules so that you can make it end? That is just, it's ridiculous to me. I watch baseball because I love baseball. You want to give me a 10th, 11th, 12th inning? Great. That's 3 more innings than I thought I was going to get when I sat down on the couch. That's what I want as a baseball fan, and I feel like, you know, not to go on a tangent here, but baseball in general has gone in this general direction of, instead of trying to make baseball be baseball, they're kind of trying to pander to people who don't like baseball. And that's a very weird thing to me. And I'm also just fundamentally opposed to the idea of having rules change at certain points of the game. Like, why would you have a different rule in the 10th inning than you had in the first 9 innings? That's a different sport you're now playing, and that's silly to me. As for your other question, Sam, about rules that we like, truthfully, I don't really like any of them. Any of these new rules that have been coming up, other than the expanded roster to 26 players, I think that's a good one. But the sticky stuff is an interesting one for me. I don't have a strong opinion about it one way or another, but the one thing I do like about it is the consistency that is at least somewhat being applied now. And it's gone to ridiculous levels. I think, you know, having players get undressed on the field a few times a game is ridiculous, and they need to find a different way to enforce consistency. But whether you are banning substances or totally allowing them, what there needs to be is a consistent enforcement and a consistent rule for it, so that we're not having situations like we've had in the past where some players, you know, are using it, but then other players are getting stopped by other teams asking for checks and whatnot, and you just end up with everyone all over the place. Choose one side and go with it.
Right. I'm reminded of that scene in The Naked Gun where Leslie Nielsen goes out to check the pitcher, and he's got a jar of Vaseline under his hat, and then they find like a Powers drill or something in his back pocket or something like that. I mean, yeah, there have been rules in place against foreign substances for a while. I think there was a better way to do this, to enforce this, than to just spring it on everybody in the middle of the season. That being said, pitchers should not be allowed to use any more than just the bare minimum of what they need to be able to hold the baseball and not have it slip out of their hands. As for the DH around universal DH, bring me the universal DH.
Yeah.
I'm a National League guy. No more pitchers hitting. Give me the universal DH. It's part of my brand. Hashtag DH to the National League.
Okay, so real quick, before we leave this episode, we have some rapid fire fun prop bets. Now, we created these, so don't go looking for them. I don't know. One or two might pop up because they might like them. But real quick, you guys got like a second on either of these. Over, under 10 total runs scored.
Over.
For the All-Star game?
Yes.
Under.
And what'd you say, Brady?
Over.
Over. I like it. Who hits the first home run, the AL or the NL? And a bonus if you give me a player.
I'll say NL, and give me Pete Alonso. Oh, no, Pete Alonso's not in the starting lineup. What am I talking about? Starting lineup, give me Freddie Freeman.
I'll go AL and Salvador Perez.
The first out, is it a strikeout, a ground out, or a fly out?
Strikeout.
Strikeout.
How fast will the first pitch be? You got to think it's going to be a fastball, right?
Yeah, 98 miles an hour.
I'll go 99.
Hey.
How many total pitches will be used, or pitchers will be used?
Let's see. You probably have like 7 or 8 per side. I'll say 16.
I'm going to go 14.
How many strikeouts total?
A billion.
Yeah, a billion feels like the right answer. I will go with 26.
Yeah, I was going to say 25. Like, that sounds about right. Yeah.
And finally, who wins MVP?
Shohei.
Shohei.
It just feels it feels just like it's destiny.
Oh, what an incredible ending that would be. Thank you all so much for joining us on SB Nation's first MLB All-Star Game preview powered by T-Mobile. Make sure you rate and subscribe now. Also, be sure to follow us all on social media. You can find me at SamWills18 on Twitter and Instagram. John, where can they find you?
At the unique Twitter handle, at John Stolness.
So creative. What about you, Brady?
No, right?
At the poorly branded for this episode, at Brady Klopfer NBA.
Oh, there you go. We'll be back early Monday morning for our reactions to round one of the MLB draft, as well as hosting a live show during the Home Run Derby on Monday night. We'll also have some special guests joining us throughout the weekend, so make sure to look out for those. But for now, we'll talk to you later.
Support for this episode comes from T-Mobile. We're a lot more than just baseball fans. We're baseball fanatics. And thanks to T-Mobile, we can stay connected to the game we love with 5G in more places. T-Mobile is your ticket to the game. So whether you're home or away, you're never far from your favorite team with America's largest and fastest 5G network. Don't get caught looking. Switch to T-Mobile, the leader in 5G today. Fastest according to OpenSignal Awards based on average speeds in USA 5G experience report, April 2021. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.